Well, I'm so glad to see so many of you here today because Mother's Day is a very difficult and controversial holiday. As a society, we tend to get focused on a lot of really strange things. I'm sure as many of you were either looking at the words or censoring the words of the Battle Hymn of the Republic, across the country, there are people looking at those words and saying, "Go, war, go," and reading it as a war song. There are others who know the actual story, that it's a peace song, and trying to suppress those roots of the song. And it really is a good example of how we can impose different kinds of meaning or extract different kinds of meaning from the same holidays, the same songs, the very same families, and the very same experiences. Mother's Day, of course, is a controversial holiday, theologically, historically, for all different kinds of reasons. One of the reasons for that, of course, is that we stereotype mothers and motherhood. It is as American as apple pie, motherhood, and the size of the flag on your lapel. And mothers are all wonderful and are all perfect, and we should all worship at the altar of mothers and mothering and becoming a mother, unless you're a Unitarian Universalist or a Shaker and you believe in zero population growth, and then becoming a mother may be a sin against ecology, depending on where you are. At least we should be replacing ourselves at the maximum. And it was so much fun during part of Unitarian Universalist history, because Unitarian Universalists, as Unitarians and as Universalists separately in the feminist movement, were very important, instrumental in the development and dissemination, bad choice of words, of birth control information from Sanger through many of the activists, because birth control for women is a Marxist issue. It is taking control of the means of production, the means of reproduction. And those were being exploited largely by men, and as Julia Ward Howe indicated, often by drunken and violent men. So it's just never that easy to come up with a nice holiday to celebrate. It's also not that easy, and if you listen to Garrison Keillor, either today after from 12 till 2 o'clock, or you heard him yesterday in the original version, he lampoons that cringe-inducing, guilt-inducing stereotype of the mother who is doing her utmost to make you feel bad, guilty, and incompetent. Those mothers exist along with those sainted mothers that are raised to pedestals never actually achieved by real human beings. It's just so hard to deal with facts, truth, what our own experiences were as children, what our own experiences are as parents, and for those parents who happen to be female, as mothers. If you look even in the comic section of the LA Times today, there are a number of lampoons of those guilt-inducing mothers who put you in the double bind. Oh, don't bother calling me. I'm just sitting by the telephone waiting for you. Oh, no, I haven't eaten in 5 days because I didn't want my mouth to be full if my son called. You know, all of the stereotypes are built on some level of truth. My mother, my sainted mother, she would hate that term, my mother actually did this. And I came over to the house, and she said, I went to one market and got these beautiful apples. I went to another market and got these wonderful pears. So I took the pear. She said, you don't like the apple? I fell apart laughing, and she just looked at me with blank incredulity. Why are you laughing? And I said, because this is the classic guilt bind. And she said, oh, how nice for you. You know, Even the issue of when Mother's Day started is controversial. Did it start 100 years ago today, as NPR teaches us? We do all go to the church of NPR, I'm sure. And so that must be the truth. It started in a Methodist church 100 years ago, and the woman who started it, Jarvis, to honor her own mother, who hung out with Julia Ward Howe, eventually renounced and denounced, and I think the modern term is distanced herself from Mother's Day. And although she had pressured Woodrow Wilson to proclaim it as a national holiday, 30 years later she said, get this thing off the books, because it had been taken over and co-opted by the flower industry, the card industry, and the fast food industry wasn't yet really going, but, and you didn't take your mom out for a hot dog, but she could feel what was going on. What was going on last year was $2.6 billion in flowers, 68 million cards, $6 billion, the largest Mother's Day expense, for brunch and dinner. It is a festival of having been co-opted. But so, what can't we co-opt? I feel like if I go on in this vein, I'm like the classic fundamentalist Christian saying, put the Christ back into Christmas and get rid of all those other things. There's nothing that we can't mess up. So the issue is not to throw the mother out with the dishwater, but to find what it is in this holiday that reminds us of its original meanings. And original meanings going back not simply to Julia Ward Howe and the idea that women's lives should not be about producing soldiers to be cannon fodder in wars. And that women's lives should not just be the passive acquiescence to whatever their fool husbands wanted to do, either in the home or in the world. But it goes back far, far earlier to Mothering Sunday in England in the 16th century. It goes back to a holiday called Matronella, which was honoring Juno in the Latin world. And it goes back to Greek holidays. The idea of honoring the source of life in the female seems to me to be something completely appropriate. That we should honor those principles of life-giving and of life-nourishing and nurturing. Not as stereotypes, but as human beings. Not either romanticizing or cutting with a rapier the various stereotypes, but dealing with people as people. There is not one thing called mother. We all have our own experiences, our own sense of gratitude, perhaps, for the mothers we had, our own sense of mourning for the mothers that we didn't have. And all of those things are true for most of us. When I think personally of the gifts that my mother gave me, the apple and the pear and the guilt, I'm grateful for her love of politics, which got me involved in politics, her love of satire, which made my first hero to be Mort Saul, and she actually took me as a junior high student to a Mort Saul concert, and my life was never the same after that. I'm grateful for how she taught me how to cheat. Let me explain. Let me spin that differently, this being a political season. How she taught me to prepare. She entered me in a speech contest when I was in third grade, and we knew that you would draw out of a hat one of six topics to speak extemporaneously on. And so she encouraged me to write six talks and to memorize them. So when I went up and I pulled the talk, the subject, I was prepared with my 5 minutes on why I prefer radio to television. I had five other speeches, also memorized, and I won. And that taught me a valuable lesson, that there's a fine line between preparing and cheating. And that preparation is something that's very important. And she started that part of me. When I look at my own life, I tend to be really unfair, which is I don't blame my mother for my failings, but I do allow her credit for my successes. I could turn it around. I could blame her, but you know why I don't have to? Because she blamed herself for anything that I did wrong. You think I'm kidding? This is absolutely true. She would give me credit for everything I did right, and she would take blame for everything that I did wrong. How she did that, I don't know. That's just really kind of magical and mysterious. She was a very predictable person. I remember when I was coming back from Peace Corps, had not seen her for 2 years because I understood that she didn't want to visit in Tunisia because she was far too old to travel. I think she was probably about 48 at the time. But to my sense of age, she was far too old to travel. And I told my wife, you know, she's going to be at the docks in New York when we pull in. And my wife said, no way. Oh, and I said, oh, way, dude, way. And I'm at the rail, we pull in, and there she was. Completely predictable and completely the kind of person that she was. One of the things that's so important is that we take the memories, the hopes, the disappointments of our mothers or our fathers or our grandparents, what we got and what we didn't get, and put it into some perspective against our own lives and our own values. When I think about Mother's Day, when I think about Father's Day, when I think about what I want to give and what I want to receive, this is the simplest issue in the world. It isn't about flowers, though I gave my wife flowers this morning, and she's not my mother, but she's a wonderful, exemplary mother and an even better grandmother. And it's not about cards. I gave my wife a card today, and I filled in my own words because I don't want to pay intellectual property rights to Hallmark. But it's not about that. The gifts that we give our children, our friends, the sick, the well, our parents, our grandparents, if we're lucky enough to have them, the only gifts that we have to give that are worth anything is time, is being with each other. That's the only truly precious thing that we have. Everything else is symbol, and only time is substance. Whether it's a telephone call, or for us really modern people who have young people who can show us how to do this, it's a computer visual chat. It is some way of being in each other's face, remaining in each other's lives, having the contact to be with each other. And it doesn't need to be romantic. Sometimes the way that we interact is yelling. I understand families that yell at each other. I don't understand families that don't talk. Oh, I'm not talking to my mother. I'm not talking to my son. I'm not talking. Yell at him, scream at him, curse him, but stay in contact. Friction is a necessity for love. And making contact and making efforts and giving time is what we do. It's what we do here. When we're lighting candles, the candles are not curative. They are to remind people of the joy and the pain in our midst. When we come together on any Sunday or in any activity, it is to be together, to share together, to give each other that precious commodity of time, which once given can't be taken back, and once missed can't be recaptured. It is brunch, but not, as people are fond of saying accurately, religion is not something that you save for Sunday mornings. Religion is how you lead your life. Mother's Day is not about brunch and a telephone call at Mother's Day, but have brunch and make the call. But the reminder is it's the right thing to do, to be in contact with the people who are important to us, the imperfect people who are important to us as imperfect individuals. The first year when Judy played and we sang all through the night, it blindsided me. I had no idea it would, but I started crying. It was the first year after my mother died. And that's the thing about time and relationships. We have the people that we have loved, that we have fought with, that have cared about us, that have fought with us, all our lives, beyond their lives. I still listen for my mother's voice, and sometimes if I'm quiet, I can still hear my mother's voice. Sometimes it whispers wisdom, sometimes it whispers criticism, and sometimes it just says, I love you. Being together, sharing together, and knowing that we are loved and are capable of returning love in the form of time and caring. That's the most precious gift of our hearts.